Welcome to the Fiona and TK Show. This is your host, TK Coleman, along with my wonderful co-host, Fiona McNeil, a.k.a. Fiona Mac. Fiona, what's up?
Hey, TK, I'm doing pretty good here. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing pretty awesome. I'm excited about the interview we have coming up today. Are you ready to rock the world for good?
I'm so excited about our show. Let's rock.
All right. On today's show, we have Jen Manning, also known as JV Manning, the author of Random Thoughts and Lots of Coffee, which I consider to be an in-your-face, no-nonsense, well, there may be a bit of nonsense because she definitely has a really good sense of humor, but it's definitely an in-your-face, whatever you want to call it, self-help book, personal development book. It's a book on happiness and the realities of life, and I think Jen's delivery and her personality and her message is very unique, and I feel very honored and excited to have her on the show today. Welcome on the show, Jen.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's good to have you. Why don't you tell us a bit about who you are and what your message is?
Who I am? Well, you know what? I'm the girl next door. I'm the girl sitting next to you at the coffee shop or the one at the traffic light sitting in her truck. I'm just a girl that's going through life like everybody else who one day sat down and I decided to write about it and my life experiences and my take and my view. And it's kind of a, well, it turned into be this gritty, inspirational stuff that I didn't even know I was capable of. And, you know, I just stayed with it. I kept writing it and people really responded. So, you know, I'm nobody special. I'm just a girl and making her way in this life.
Did the desire to write just come out of nowhere? Like, was this something you woke up one day and you realized, hey, I need to write to inspire people? Or is this something you've always dreamt of doing?
You know, when I've always written, and it was always stories right from the time I was a little girl. You know, my third grade teacher went to my mom one day and said, you know, I'd like to keep one of her stories because she's going to write books someday. And it was always fiction writing. And back in September 2011, you know, I sat down and I hadn't written for a long time. Life had kind of blown out the creative spark and I needed to get it out of my system and I needed to write. And I knew that. I had no intentions of being an inspirational writer. I needed to write to get it out of me to do some process to help me heal at that point. And in turn, it helps other people and that's fueled me on. You know, I don't know where it came from. I'm so happy that I found it. It's just kind of a blunt, this is how it is, and some people are finding, you know, the inspiration in that, and it's fueled me to write even more.
Interesting, Jen. I have a question for you. We put the word out on our Facebook pages that we were going to have the opportunity to talk with you today. And some of our Facebook friends mentioned that after going to your website, they could really relate to you in a lot of ways and really felt they understood your message. One of the questions that someone wrote in for us to ask you was they're wondering if you felt different from others when you were younger or if you always had a sense that the way your views are about the world are not that common.
It's funny. For my whole life I've always felt, you know, different because I don't tend to hide from truths. And I never have. Even from being a child, I had to grow up fast, and I had to see things for the way they were. And, you know, it's not always black and white, and it always kind of set me apart, you know, and I always felt different because my brain sees things differently when I look at things or situations or random pieces that I connect in my brain that teaches me a lesson, you know, and it's always kind of, you know, sometimes it's caused me problems, you know, because I see things and people don't. And the older I get and the more in tune with myself I get, that I realize I have to cut people some slack, you know, because they don't see things like I do. And sometimes it takes them longer to process or it takes them longer to arrive at the truth, where I'm like a bull in a china shop and I'm going right through it, and I have to step back sometimes, and that's always kind of set me apart. And I've always felt differently. You know, I don't react like normal people to life circumstances. I don't break down and I don't handle things the same way. And that's always kind of made me feel a little different. That's a good question.
Jen, could you give us an example of some time in your life that's been meaningful to you that you've handled things in a different way, and it's either worked out for you or against you? I'd love to hear either story.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the most prevalent was, you know, life has always been one thing after another, it seems, for me. And you know, I've always thought, you know, this is the way it is. This is how life's going to be. I'm just going to have to deal with it. This is my lot in life. The past 3 years, you know, it's kind of come to a kind of a head to say where, you know, my mom was bipolar. And in October 2011, she ended up taking her own life. And it was such a shock to me, you know, it drove me to my knees. And the first time in my life, I thought I had found something that was going to break me. I didn't know how to handle it. And so I remember sitting there for a couple of days, and I kind of went into my head, and, you know, nothing about what she did made sense. And no amount of circling around it, reading books, nothing was going to make sense with it. And what I figured out inside of me was I needed to have something good come from what she had done. And such a senseless, horrible thing and horrible thing to have to face. So in turn, I took that and I used that to fuel me on so that I could go within like 2 weeks afterwards, and I tried to help people that, you know, were doing a suicide prevention hotline. And I took all my hurt and all my anger and everything, and I turned it into good. And I needed to use that to fuel me on and to make sense of something so senseless and to put some good back into the world. And that's how I handled that. And I know most people look at me like I'm crazy. They, you know, they don't want to talk about it, but they keep looking at me expecting me to break. And when I turned it around, nobody really knew how to handle that.
When you say nobody knew how to handle that, what do you mean specifically? Like, what was the reaction you were getting that indicated that inability?
They all looked at me like they thought I had lost it. You know, what are you doing talking to people that are suicidal or have thought about it or who have gone through it or experienced it in their lives with a loved one? Why are you putting yourself out there? You're going to break. You're going to fall apart. There's no good can come of this. And, you know, for them, they're looking at me thinking I'm hiding from it or I'm running from it, and they're not realizing that's not who I am. I don't run from anything. And if I can turn it around, it's going to heal me in the process. And people just really didn't understand that. They didn't understand how I could take this portion of my life and everything leading up to that and find inspiration in it to reach out and help other people.
Have those opinions changed now? Because clearly you've come a long way and you have been successful in learning lessons in unconventional ways. So have the attitudes changed? Has anyone come back and said, you know, hey, I had you all wrong, or I underestimated you, or I apologize? Have you had any reactions like that?
I get the I underestimated you quite a bit. Or, you know, what I get a lot is people look at me and they're like, I had no idea this is what you were doing, or I had no idea that this was even a possibility. And, you know, they'll come up and they're like, you know, I'm sorry, you know, I misjudged you, or we just assumed the worst, or we just assumed this. And with my writing and every how that's gone with the website and people's reactions to it, they're starting to reassess, well, maybe I'm not crazy after all. Maybe what I'm doing is a different take, kind of outside the norm. And, yeah, they are reassessing how, you know, with this particular one or with my writing. Or, you know, the question I always get is, why do you write about such personal things? Why put that out there? You know, I don't get it. It doesn't make sense. And, you know, not only am I healing myself in the process, which I didn't even realize at the time when I started this, I'm apparently helping other people reach peace and understanding and coming to different ways to view things. And that's just, you know, that's changed a lot of people's minds. You know, they still don't understand why I write about such personal things or whatever, but they're starting to come around to it.
Do you think we need more of a personal approach in the world of self-help and personal development? You know, there are a lot of people out there who are put off by inspirational material. They see it as a bunch of cheesy motivational fluff, a bunch of slogans and platitudes that really don't address, you know, the real issues of life. And it sounds to me like, you know, by you being so personal and so transparent, you may be speaking to that crowd of people. Do you think we need more of that in the inspirational field?
That's an awesome question, because I was one of those people. I've never watched a self-help show before. I don't read self-help books. I've never done it. You know, I've always been all right, this is what I'm going to do. I need to deal with this. And I would see posters on Facebook, you know, happiness and smile. And I'm looking around my life going, it's just not possible. You know, I'm not going to smile because I have all of these bills piling up, or I have all this life stuff weighing me down. And a lot of these fluff or cheesy motivational stuff that people comment on, it doesn't personalize it, in my opinion, where I'm saying, hey, this is what I've gone through, and it may not be exactly what you've gone through, but here's what I did. Maybe that will help you. And it's more gritty. This is life. It's, you know, sometimes life knocks you down and it kicks you, and you can't find your happy. You're not going to find your happy until you deal with what you have to or face what you have to. And until you do that, those posters are going to be like almost mocking you, because you don't know how, you know. And I love the posters, and I love the inspirational pages that I've come in contact with. You know, they spark a creative thing sometimes, because I'll see that and I'll go, oh, you know, this thing that happened to me, I could turn it around and work that into, because that's eventually what I ended up to. And, yeah, it sounds cheesy at first, especially when you're mired in the crap that life gives you. But if you can turn it around and eventually find you're happy, then I don't think you see it as cheesy going forward.
It seems too many people are beat down by life. They are stressed out by their job, their family, relationships. And it seems like good luck, good opportunities, and happiness is always happening to others, despite their best efforts. How can they learn to turn that around? What can we do to help them?
One of the first things that I would say is all those people that appear to be the happiest, that appear to get things handed to them or have all the luck, we don't know what they're fighting inside. You know, from the outside looking in, they look like they have it all, but we don't know what it took for them to get there or what they go home to. And the first thing in order to find your happiness and to face your life and do all of that is to stop comparing it to others. And that took me a long time to realize. You know, I would see somebody who just seemed to get it all, and here I am working 50 hours a week, and I'm, you know, trying to get this book going or whatever, and I don't know the struggles that anybody else put into their life or what it took for them to get to that point. So I stopped. I had to stop comparing my life to everybody else's. If I did that, I'd probably never leave the house, you know. And your happiness and your success in life, you know, it may take more work than it does the guy next door. It may take more struggles to get you where you need to be, but the object and the whole goal is to never quit. You know, it's sometimes it's baby steps, one foot in front of the other, and life knocks you down, and you get back up again, and life knocks you down again, and sometimes you sit there for a while and catch your breath, you know, and then you get back up and you keep going. And it can be a constant struggle, you know, and then one day you might just turn around the corner, you know, kind of like I did, you know, back in September when I was like, hey, you know what, I'm going to build a website and start to write. And it was a whim. You know, life was awful at that point, so much drama. And I sat down and on a whim, I started writing. You know, and a year and a half later, I have a book and a bunch of followers and people who I never saw coming. if you had said this to me 2 years ago, I would have laughed at you. You know, and it's all about perseverance and you know, you get knocked down, you catch your breath, you dust yourself off, you get back up. You make your own happy. In life and in family, and, you know, if things aren't working, you change them. You can bitch and moan about it, you can complain about it, and it doesn't solve anything. You just go in circles. It's that keep going forward motion and using, you know, that 1 foot in the past to propel you to the future. And that's how you find you're happy. And at least that's how I did it. It worked for me. One of the little known facts about me is from the time I was 7 years old, I have absolutely junk legs. And I have been in pain to some degree every day of my life. And, you know, for most people that I've known for years, they look at me when I say it now and they're like, I had no idea, you know, because I had to keep going, because to give into that pain in my legs, to give into all of that to my knees and the surgeries would mean I wouldn't leave my house. And I refused to let the pain stop me. You know, well, back in March, I kind of had to because I tore my meniscus and couldn't walk very well. But, you know, I worked through that, and I'm still working through that. And it's, you know, it's the same thing with life pain. You have to keep going regardless.
In relation to that very topic, one of my readers requests the following. Could you ask Ms. Manning to address this situation? A young boy I know, who at one time was a karate student of mine, had been battling against his brain and spinal cancer since 2007. He died May 22nd, just 4 days shy of his birthday. This boy was feisty, loving, funny, and knew how to live his life in spite of all the suffering he and his family went through during his six-year battle with this cancer. He lived every moment fully. He was this wonderful kid. Why him? Why now? Why at all? I am grappling with these and other questions. Yes, he was inspiring and he was happy, so why take it all away?
You know, I wrote a whole piece on this, and it's called Everything Happens for a Reason, right? One of the things I've come to learn, and it took me a long time to understand, is that there are some things in life that will just never make sense. And you can go round and round and round and face it and do therapy and get angry and rail against it, and you still will never be able to answer the why or figure out what caused this, what happened, because you can't make sense of a senseless event in life sometimes. And when it comes to, like, this situation with that boy, you can't find the why. And you can drive yourself crazy and look under every rock and in every book and, in, you know, and pray if you pray and talk to spiritual guiders. And you're never going to be able to answer that question. And the sooner you realize that, and the sooner you make peace with what happened and understand that it's never going to make sense, and then take that and take his life and everything that he did and everything he stood for and build upon it for him. Do things in his name that he's not going to be able to do physically, but you can do for him, you know, for his spirit. Do, you know, start a foundation. Start a karate foundation in his name. Build on all the good that he would have done had he been given the chance. You know, and the wise, the sooner you realize that you can't, you know, you can look the wise and you can go around, and the sooner you realize that you don't have to answer that question. You know, as humans, we want to. We have to have answers, and we have to have them now in order to somehow justify it. But there are so many things in life that just defy justification. You can't make sense of losing him at such a young age. You know, you can't make sense of some life events because there's no sense to have. So take everything that he stood for and build on it for him. And make peace with he was here, he touched your life, he touched his parents' lives, and it's, you know, it's awful that he died at such a young age. but stop trying to answer that why question, because it's impossible.
At the time of our suffering, it seems as if an answer to the question why is our greatest need, but as it turns out, if I'm understanding you correctly, that question tends to bring more agony than anything else.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I've spent a lot of my life trying to figure out why certain things happened. You know, I lost a best friend growing up to a drunk driver. You know, and I made myself crazy with the why of it. Why did this happen to him? You know, he was a talented artist. He had just landed this amazing gig, you know, in a working for a comic book company. And he was just such a force, you know, and I made myself crazy with this, thinking, you know, why him? You know, in one hand, I'm like, you know, what would he do, you know, if he were still here? And he would be touching lives. He would be helping struggling artists. He would be channeling all the good that was into him, you know, into the world, you know, and he'd probably be standing up against drunk driving. And so what I did back then was I took that and I did it for him. And I put as much good into the world and talked out against drunk driving, you know, and started funds for the artists and try to encourage artists to follow their dreams, because I was his voice now. And that was, I'd never be able to explain why he was taken from me or this world, but at least I could do something to continue on for him. And that healed me in the process.
You know, this conversation about happiness and finding the best that there is in every situation, it, you know, Jen, it leads me to another question. We deal with a lot of people in our lives every day who are creative people like yourself, artists, writers, painters, photographers, people who are making a living creating and expressing themselves through art. One of the questions that we had from our Facebook friends are you able to make a living doing what you love through your writing?
Not yet. That's a goal.
Okay.
You know, I have a day job. You know, I work 40 to 50 hours a week. I work for a country club in the accounting department. So, you know, I'm clear, linear thinking in the morning, doing numbers and making everything balance. And then I write every chance I get. I create posters for the Facebook page every chance I get. You know, it's my outlet. And, you know, eventually I would love for, you know, whatever I write in the future or this book to take off, and I want to write full time. Absolutely. That's my dream.
Well, one of the things that comes up with when you're working with creative people, there seems to be a conflict between being able to find happiness and being a good artist. You know, the artist is their biggest critic. There's always room for improvement. You know, there seems to be a sense of inherent suffering that goes along with identifying yourself as a great artist, a creator. You know, could you address that just from your personal standpoint? Because you seem to be the opposite. You seem to have found happiness from suffering. Like, you know, when you shared your story about your mom and how that left you in a place where you had nowhere to go, well, you created something positive out of it instead of, you know, the tendency to hang around in the suffering.
Well, you know, I'm done with suffering. I'm done with, you know, you're always going to have sad days and you're going to come up against life things regardless of, you know, how happy everything is now. But I don't need that to fuel my creativity. I use it as a lesson. If with me, I'm going to take whatever I'm facing in life and I'm going to break it down, find the lesson, and I'm going to use that lesson to fuel me in my writing. Because maybe somebody else needs that lesson. and then I'm going to deal with it, I'm going to face it, and then I'm going to move on from it, because I don't need any more unhappy days. I don't need any more sad days or clinging to something that's over in order to fuel my writing. My writing is, you know, taking lessons and taking all the bad and then finding that, you know, there's good in it. And, you know, granted, some days I've been right wound up or something's, you know, made me angry or sad, and I'll sit down and I'll start to write, and I don't like the tone of what's coming out of me, so I stop. Because it's a rant. It's not going to do anybody any good to read it. It's, you know, my stuff is real, it's in your face, but it's in a tone that people can relate to. And because I don't go off on rants and I'm not all rainbows and butterflies when I'm really angry inside and I'm trying to force happiness, it's kind of a byproduct of all the life lessons saying, okay, I've seen the worst of days and I've written about it and I've faced the lessons, so now I'm going to take those lessons and go forward and actually use them, if that makes any sense.
So basically you're stopping and checking yourself before you... your creativity really goes off in a direction that you don't want it to go. You know.
If it's going to be too negative, and there's some pieces where, you know, I wrote a piece a while back. I was tired of always having to let things go, you know, and in order to avoid unnecessary drama, where somebody will do something and it bothers you or it makes you angry. And instead of facing it and having it all blow up, you just let it go and you let it go and you let it go. And, you know, and I was tired of people forcing their will and what they wanted. And, you know, I was always labeled the troublemaker because I was like, hey, whoa, hold up. This isn't working for me. You know, here's why. Let's work on it. And, you know, I sat down and I wrote an angry piece because I was angry. And it actually kind of, you know, it started off angry. And then as I work through it at the end, I'm like, you know what, I'm tired of letting go of letting go. So I'm not going to anymore. And it kind of, that's where the lesson came in, where, you know what, I don't have to. And so taking the anger into the writing and following it through, I ended up releasing it at the end of the piece anyway. But, no, I understand, you know, taking anger or sadness and using it to fuel you into making beauty or making inspirational posters, you're touching other people and healing yourself at the same time. So I'm hoping people find some peace with their art.
Jen, cool. You know, if I can ask a follow-up, you know, I live here in L.A. I have a lot of friends who are, you know, striving to become actors and film producers and screenwriters. And, you know, it's tough out here. You know, there are far more people going after the work than there are jobs available. People have very little time, it seems, to really devote themselves to their creative work because they're living in an expensive city where they have to be to pursue their dreams. They're spending all their time working at odd jobs just to stay afloat. And, you know, this whole challenge of dealing with the factors of limited time, limited resources, massive amounts of competition makes things difficult for the aspiring artist. And we're often told, you know, follow your bliss, pursue your dream, and things will work out. Well, what do you do when you are following your dream and life just seems to be, you know, kicking you in the butt even harder because of that? Any thoughts?
Never give up. Never give up hope. You know, and I live in Maine. It's not, you know, a big city, and it's, you know, kind of a different situation, like, for me in my writing. But for me, it's you know, finding the time to write in a busy life and how easy it would be to say, you know what, I can't do this. I have a family. I have to work to pay the bills. But I'm finding that when you believe so wholeheartedly in something and you want it so bad that you can taste it, you just keep pursuing it. And in pursuing it, and I'm not an actor or, you know, and I don't understand that dream because it's not mine, but I know that, you know, going to auditions and pursuing your craft, you're living your dream whether you realize it or not, because you're taking the steps and you're learning your trade and you're putting yourself out there and you're doing the auditions, and you never know. One of them could be your break. But if it's something that you want with everything inside of you, then you're going to do whatever it takes for as long as it takes until you can realize that. And just, you don't give up on it. You know, if I have to write at 1 o'clock in the morning because I just have this burning need to get this piece out of me, I'm going to write at 1 o'clock in the morning. But for the actors who are going to classes, who are pursuing their dreams, or the artists that are painting and trying to get galleries, you know, interested in their work, and you just never can give up on it. And sometimes, you know, life will get in the way. You've got obligations. You have to pay bills. So you kind of have to put it aside for a little while. But never lose touch of that. There's no expiration date on dreams. Just because it doesn't happen tomorrow or in a week or in 6 months doesn't negate it. It doesn't expire. You just got to pull it down, dust it off, and say, okay, let's try it again. And never, you know, visit it every once in a while. If life gets in the way of your dream, you know, you find that you have kids to raise, or you've got to pay rent, or, you know, you have to eat and pay bills, then you have to do what you have to do to get back to the place where you can pursue it. And just, you never give up on it. It's you know, it's a part of who you are. It's kind of in your DNA. So if you're not pursuing it or living it, you're not being true to who you are. It's not the end result half the time. It's the getting there that's the journey.
Jen, I love your fighter spirit. I love that determination that I hear in your voice. If our listeners want to hear more of what you have to say, where can they go to find more Jen Manny?
I have my website, which is randomthoughtsandlotsofcoffee.com. And it's Lotsa, L-O-T-S-A. On Facebook, it's facebook.com/randomthoughtsandlotsofcoffee. I have my book on my website, and it's also on Amazon and in Kindle format. And that, you know, the website is where I post my blog pieces. The Facebook page, I'll make posters and, so, you know, usually write my own quotes and tie in a lot of coffee, because coffee fuels my entire existence. And, you know, and some posters I make are sarcastic because people need the laugh. And if I put serious posters up all the time, you know, it helps people and they love it. They identify with it. But like the other day, I throw one up with somebody with crazy hair, you know, because there's a lot of life things in life that you can't control, and your hair reminds you of that every day.
Well, you certainly made me laugh. You certainly made me think, and it really has been a pleasure chatting with you. I recommend everyone to buy your book. I'm sure Fiona feels the same. We could sit here and ask you questions all day. You have very good insight. So we'll have to have you back on the podcast sometime in the future, especially when that second book comes out.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Thanks a lot, Jen.
Thanks, Fiona.
Bye for now.